Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book, False Dawn, The New Deal, and the Promise of Recovery. 1933-1947 is a scholarly economic history by George Selgin that reassesses the common story about the New Deal and the end of the Great Depression. Written for a professional and serious general audience, the book examines how Franklin D. Roosevelt's early policies helped stabilize the financial system, but argues that many later New Deal measures slowed the return to full economic recovery. Selgin's purpose is not to offer a simple anti-FDR polemic. Instead, he reconstructs the policy record using economic research, historical evidence, and macroeconomic reasoning to ask a narrower question: what actually drove recovery, and what did not? The book places special emphasis on investment business confidence, monetary constraints, banking stabilization, and the changing relationship between government and the private sector from the 1930s through the post-war years. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, reevaluating the New Deal as a recovery program rather than a political legacy. Selgin's central move is to separate the New Deal's broader historical significance from its effectiveness as an engine of recovery. The book accepts that the Roosevelt administration pursued multiple goals, including relief, reform, and institutional reconstruction, but argues that those aims should not be confused with rapid economic revival. This distinction matters because many standard accounts treat New Deal activism as synonymous with recovery itself. Selgin instead tests that assumption against unemployment trends, investment behavior, and business response. His argument is that some early actions helped arrest panic, but later interventions often added uncertainty or raised costs for producers. By framing the New Deal as a mixed policy program rather than an undisputed success story, the book forces readers to ask which parts of the 1930s agenda were stabilizing and which were obstructive. The result is a reinterpretation of the era that is less about ideology than about policy effectiveness and economic mechanism. Secondly, why banking stabilization and leaving gold mattered more than later stimulus. A major thread in the book is that the strongest early gains came from restoring monetary and financial stability. Selgin emphasizes the ending of the banking crisis and the loosening of gold standard constraints as pivotal steps that made recovery possible. These measures reduced immediate panic, improved liquidity, and allowed the monetary system to function with less deflationary pressure. In contrast, later New Deal policies are presented as much less effective in generating sustained expansion. The book, therefore, distinguishes between actions that removed barriers to recovery and actions that attempted to direct recovery through administrative intervention. This distinction is important because it shifts attention away from headline spending programs and toward institutional conditions that affect expectations, credit, and investment. Selgin's treatment suggests that a recovery path can begin with stabilization, yet still stall if policy continues to create uncertainty or distort incentives. The book uses this contrast to argue that the first phase of the New Deal helped end collapse, while the later phase failed to create a durable private sector rebound. Thirdly, the National Industrial Recovery Act and the costs of central planning pressures. Selgin devotes close attention to policies that increased regulation and coordination in the name of recovery, especially the National Industrial Recovery Act. In his account, these interventions often raised production costs, reduced flexibility, and made future policy harder for firms to predict. The book's larger point is not that regulation is always harmful, but that crisis-era attempts to centrally manage prices, wages, and industrial behavior can unintentionally suppress the very investment needed for recovery. Business confidence depends not only on demand, but also on expectations about the rules under which firms will operate. If those rules shift rapidly or appear hostile to profit-making, firms may delay hiring and capital spending. Selgin uses this logic to explain why some New Deal initiatives could coexist with continued high unemployment. The analysis is especially relevant because it challenges the idea that more administrative coordination automatically translates into faster macroeconomic healing. Instead, the book argues that policy certainty, market signals, and the ability of firms to plan for the future are essential ingredients of genuine recovery. Fourthly, World War II and the post-war rebound as a story of renewed private investment. Another key theme is Selgin's claim that full recovery did not occur during the early New Deal, but only after the war, when private business investment revived strongly. He does not deny that wartime mobilization reduced unemployment, but he distinguishes wartime employment from peacetime prosperity. Military production could absorb labor and resources without proving that the civilian economy had regained its normal growth dynamics. The post-war period matters because it shows that the economy recovered not simply through public spending or wartime controls, but through a restoration of business confidence and capital formation. Selgin's phrase, great rapprochement, captures this idea that reconciliation between government and business helped remove the political and regulatory hostility of the 1930s. Once firms believed that market activity would no longer be treated as an adversary, investment rebounded. This argument gives the book a broader structural focus. Recovery is not just about aggregate demand in the short run, but about whether the policy environment allows durable private expansion after a crisis has passed. Lastly, a policy warning built from economic history rather than partisan polemic, the book's most practical contribution is its cautionary lesson for future downturns. Selgin does not present the New Deal as a simple error to be dismissed, because he recognizes that it included genuine accomplishments and was shaped by the immense pressures of the Depression. But he argues that its record should be read carefully by policymakers who instinctively search the 1930s for guidance. The practical lesson is that crisis interventions can unintentionally prolong stagnation if they increase uncertainty, suppress investment, or deepen conflict between the state and the private sector. That makes the book relevant beyond the historical case itself. It offers a framework for evaluating emergency policy by asking whether measures merely deliver short-term relief or actually support a lasting return to productive growth. Compared with more celebratory New Deal histories, Falstein stands out for its insistence on economic mechanism, long-run recovery, and the role of private capital formation. It is therefore especially useful for economists, historians, and policy readers who want a data-conscious reassessment rather than a conventional narrative of governmental rescue. In conclusion, False Dawn will be most valuable to readers interested in economic history, the Great Depression, monetary policy, and the long debate over the New Deal's legacy. Economists and historians will find it useful because it synthesizes a large body of research into a single argument about recovery, investment, and policy incentives. Policy-oriented readers will also benefit from its broader warning: emergency measures can stabilize a crisis without necessarily creating the conditions for durable growth. What makes the book stand out in its category is its refusal to treat the New Deal as either heroic intervention or simple failure. Instead, Selgin examines which policies actually ended collapse, which ones hindered adjustment, and why post-war recovery depended so heavily on revived private enterprise. That combination of archival sensitivity, economic reasoning, and willingness to challenge a familiar consensus gives the book unusual force. It is less a polemic than a rigorous reinterpretation, and that makes it especially useful for anyone trying to understand how governments should and should not respond to deep economic downturns. If you would like to support George Selgin, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.